at 360-2416.
Conference record has joined the conference.
Okay, there you go. Okay, we're recording the conference, and you can contact me for audio at 907-360-2416 or Olivia Baker at 907-450-8100. We're going to ask everyone, we will keep you on mute, and you can certainly use your own mute on your own phone. To unmute, please hit #6, and to mute, please hit *6. So we're trying to avoid as much background noise as we can. And with that, we'll get started. President Johnson?
Thanks very much, Robbie, and thank you all for being here this afternoon. Our purpose is to continue the healing process and the changes that began with the Board of Regents last spring and continued with the disclosures in October by Chancellor Mike Powers regarding UAF's failure to follow its own student discipline policies or federal Title IX guidance when dealing with sexual assaults on campus. From the beginning, I want to make it clear that the Regents and I have insisted that these issues be addressed, rectified, and made public. And I want to express my appreciation to Chancellor Powers for working hand-in-hand with the Regents and me, and indeed serving as a great leader on this important matter for our campus and for our community. For that reason, the Board of Regents and I contacted and contracted with highly regarded attorney Jeff Feldman. And Jeff looked at three issues on our behalf. One, the root causes for the discipline breakdown. Two, whether UA leadership, UAF, the system, the Board of Regents, took appropriate action once the problem was discovered. And three, whether effective steps were taken to address the systemic or other failures that occurred. In his report, Feldman identified three major causes for the failure. First, the disciplinary philosophy of the former UAF Dean of Students. Second, an initial lack of understanding and response to the 2011 Title IX guidance from the Federal Department of Education. And three, a lack of oversight by top UAF administrators, as well as inadequate resources for Title IX and student discipline. Feldman's review included interviews with current and past employees and a review of processes, policies, emails, and correspondence. Literally thousands of pages of material were included in his review. During that time, we've worked diligently on various tasks to address these issues, many of which have been completed. But in reality, we've just begun the process to change the culture at the university. Title IX is really important to the Board of Regents and to me. When we became aware of these problems in the student discipline process, the board proceeded appropriately, and when I came on board, directed me to resolve it, including asking for this external review. Title IX policy and subsequent disclosures had been handled at the highest levels and has involved leadership at statewide and on each of our campuses. This report by attorney Jeff Feldman, requested by the Regents and me, is a reminder that we have been working diligently, but still have a ways to go. UA and UAF have taken steps to implement procedural, staffing, and structural changes. At the system level, new processes ensure that past failures will not be repeated. In addition to the Feldman report, I have initiated a series of actions to assess and remedy the problems through initiatives across the university system, including appointing Saichi Oba, an executive here in the statewide administration, as the statewide Title IX liaison to the campuses, instituting quarterly Title IX scorecards designed to keep myself and the Regents informed Title IX progress at all campuses, directing each campus to conduct a gap analysis of its processes and needs, initiating a climate survey system-wide, instituting a Title IX working group that works that reports directly to the chancellors, and requiring the campuses to report every single sexual assault to me. We recognize that it will be a process and an ongoing need for training and vigilance. At UAF, a lot of changes have taken place, and I'd like to ask Chancellor Powers to address a number of these at this time.
UAF has focused on two key thematic areas. One are procedural changes, and two is a cultural shift or cultural continuation of a shift that has been occurring. On the procedural side, we have designated one employee with the authority to coordinate all compliance efforts, and that's the Title IX officer. We've established an integrated approach to these issues with the Dean of Students, police, and this Title IX officer. Monthly meetings with this group to review issues and events focus largely on four themes: prevention, education, enforcement, and compliance. We've implemented a software case management system, which allows for data capture, trending, reporting, ultimately used for planning purposes relative to additional best practices. In addition, on the planning side, and as President Johnson has mentioned, we are an active part of the university-wide Title IX Planning Task Force governance group that includes staff, faculty, students. We've established 10 MOUs, Memorandums of Understanding, with public safety and advocacy groups to share data. And then reporting, as President Johnson mentioned, actively involved with his quarterly report card, scorecard, related to the 17 policies that govern Title IX issues, reporting, notification, investigation, follow-up, conflicts of interest, et cetera. Equally important is the continued cultural shift that's occurring across, frankly, all campuses across the U.S., but here in particular at UAF, 98% of our employees have completed Title IX training. Over 500 student leaders have been trained in active bystander training, and that is engagement in the process. If you see something, say something, do something. Several hundred students have completed online alcohol awareness and healthy relationship training as part of this cultural shift. It sounds counterintuitive, but the number of reported incidents of all types are up significantly over the last year or so. People are very comfortable stepping forward and asking questions relative to any of these types of incidents. All student athletes have been trained in Green Dot. This is the active bystander engagement. All international students, because of cultural issues, have been trained. All resident advisors in the dorms, we've established a student advisory group to help guide our awareness efforts. We've sent students to the national conference where other universities on the West Coast have shared best practices. And the planning is now underway for fall orientation of new students. Early coordination with military colleagues from across town, trauma training with law enforcement partners, and we have begun visits to the outlying campuses. A month ago, we were in Nome holding a town hall meeting. Last week, Kotzebue. Earlier this week, Kotzebue. Bethel next week, Fort Yukon is being scheduled. So this is one of the more exciting areas of change, is this continued change with the cultural interest in preventing sexual assault.
Well, thanks very much, Chancellor Powers. You know, that's a lot of great work has been done under your leadership at the campus. Further efforts, however, will be needed to sustain and advance the University of Alaska's commitment to Title IX compliance. Changes to the Board of Regents policies and related employees are still necessary to achieve Title IX compliance. Ensuring adequate resources, both in terms of staffing and funding at the statewide and campus levels, will also be critical, and this is despite the state's difficult budget situation. And ensuring that the next UAF chancellor understands the need to make Title IX compliance a top priority. I want to again thank Chancellor Powers for his diligence to address UAF's past inattention to these issues. His team confronted the problems in a very proactive and public way. He has involved the campus community to ensure that change happens, which has already had a remarkable effect, and the country, his community, and his campus have taken notice. In closing, the Feldman report says that these were organizational, institutional, and systemic failures, but they were not the result of an intentional disregard of legal requirements. I will take it one step further and tell you that going forward, the regents hold me personally accountable, and I want to be accountable, to make sure our campuses are safe places for our students, and that our compliance, our systems and programs and processes are functioning at the highest, most efficient levels, and that our staff and faculty are trained, and that our student discipline process is fair and effective. Changes in institutional culture are critical in this area, both in terms of prevention and in our response to sexual assaults. Cultural change is in part a function of senior leadership, and senior leadership has changed. Culture change isn't accomplished overnight. We have set that change in motion, and we will make sure it happens. The board's leadership and Chancellor Powers' leadership in this area has been courageous and unwavering. I have no doubt that the board will hold me responsible, and I, in turn, have left no doubt with the chancellors that I will hold them responsible for making sure our campuses are safe places to study and work. That ends the prepared remarks, and I suppose we're open for questions from those present and on the line.
This report specifically looked at 5 cases and then potentially 11 others that were not handled according to university policy. Because sexual assault cases often aren't criminally prosecuted outside the university, what can a victim expect from the university in terms of discipline?
Well, I'll start and then hand it to Chancellor Powers. Under the Title IX guidance that we got from the Department of Education in 2011, it is no longer adequate for a university simply to refer cases to the criminal process, which, of course, did occur in all of these cases. But since 2011, we're obligated to investigate, adjudicate, and discipline ourselves. And so those will be, you know, taken on a case-by-case basis. I think a victim of sexual assault can be sure that we will go through that legally required process and make, again, with the goal of providing a safe learning environment. In addition to that, we'll be providing advocacy for victims and care for victims, and that's actually task one in any of these cases, is to make sure that student, faculty member, whoever it is on our campus, is safe. And then we'll go through the investigatory, the adjudicative, and then the discipline process.
So what's within the realm of discipline?
Oh, it can vary from suspension to expulsion, and it can even include the removal of a degree that's been granted. We can't put people in jail. That's what the criminal side does. But we certainly have many tools in our toolbox for appropriate discipline in sexual assault cases.
And will that process happen retroactively with the cases that were reviewed?
Those cases are that process is going on as we speak, and yes.
Thank you. So one of the findings in the report, as you mentioned, is that one of the issues was the lack of resources. And considering the budget climate and potential cuts to the university going forward, how do you believe that will impact attempts to increase resources for this?
It won't.
Okay.
This is a top priority. This is absolutely fundamentally critical. And we will ensure that we've got the appropriate staffing in place to provide a safe learning environment for our students. The chancellors and I have talked about this and worked on this, and they're very clear that no matter what happens in the budget process, we will fund these positions and we will provide a safe learning environment, period.
Only thing I would add is the regents have made that clear as well.
Sure.
And for FY17, we have UAF has an additional FTE in the Dean of Students office and finalizing an MOU for an advocate beginning July 1.
I know this was like a self-audit. Did you guys get in trouble from anybody outside of the university?
No. I think it's important for you to know, however, that the Federal Department of Education is conducting an investigation of the University of Alaska campuses. They have yet to finalize that investigation and provide their report. Our view, however, when I came in and Chancellor Powers came in as the interim chancellor with the region's full support, it was really critical that we get an objective outside set of eyes, expert set of eyes on this complex and important issue for us so that we were very clear about what had happened and why it happened.
And do you know when they're going to be finished with that? Or?
We do not, unfortunately. But again, we're not waiting for them to complete their report. I think that was the case in October last year when we came out with and disclosed this publicly. We're not waiting. We're going to do the right thing, be transparent and proactive. Similarly here, I think it's a real sign of responsibility and ownership of the regents and the leadership of the university to engage outside counsel, which we didn't need to do, to come in and take a real hard look at what happened, the response to what happened, and our current status in terms of compliance.
I understand it could be over a year before we get results, and we were originally part of a group of 60 universities. That list has now grown to 160 universities that are under review.
One more question. And as far as I know, you guys put the sports teams through the Green Dot. Was that sparked from the Nolan Young case? Or was that just already brought?
No. There's no spike in athletics relative to sexual assault. It's no different than the rest of the campus.
Okay.
But what we did find, though, is that these young men and women are leaders on the campus, and actually they stepped up and said they wanted to lead in this area. And so, as the chancellor indicated, every single one of them has gone through the training. They have presented to the Board of Regents, and very impressive leadership. And that's one of the values of intercollegiate athletics is. And other, student activities on campuses, the opportunity to develop leadership. And so we were very pleased that they stood up and took on that responsibility.
Another thing the report mentioned, as you said, put much of the blame on, I believe, the shoulders of former Dean of Students. And I'm curious, I know he wasn't mentioned much by name in the report, but how much of the responsibility do you think falls on that one position and how much of the responsibility falls on the system as a whole?
Well, you know, you ask a sort of quantitative question, and I'm not, the report didn't indicate that, and I'm not prepared to say 38%, here and 42% there. The report did say that it really was an organizational, institutional failure. So I would say to the extent that former Dean of Students was the point person on UAF for this, He bears a great deal of responsibility. That said, he's not the only person who's accountable for making sure that we comply with Title IX and provide a safe learning environment for students. And so to that extent, other people certainly in the organization, in the institution, bear responsibility. I would like to say, though, that every single leader who is here at the University of Alaska as we speak today is absolutely on board, understands the importance of this issue, and will ensure that we're in compliance.
And you mentioned the importance of leadership in this going forward and how everyone's committed. Do you anticipate any other changes of leadership because of this report or anything similar?
I do not.
Do
did anyone else, when the dean retired, but did anyone else lose their job or discipline for their failure to do their job?
People were held accountable. Every single person has been held accountable. And as I indicated, Dan, going forward, people are crystal clear of their responsibilities. And if going forward anything like this were to happen again, they understand very clearly what's going to happen.
Anyone on the phone? If you have a question, please don't forget to unmute your phone at #6. Anyone else on the phone who might have a question for either President Johnson or Chancellor Powers?
Yes, this is Tegan with ADN. I think I might have just not unmuted my phone. But did you hear the question I just asked?
No, ma'am.
Okay, sorry. I'll say again. I was wondering, President Johnson, you just said that people were held accountable within the university system. How were they specifically held accountable, and who was held accountable in these cases?
Well, Tegan, a couple of responses there. Good question. First up, as you know, in the public sector generally, but personnel matters are confidential. So that's one thing that's important to note here as we go forward. Second, there were individuals who chose to retire or resign their positions at the university. Third, people have been counseled. And have publicly stated their responsibility for things that did or did not occur. And finally, expectations have been made, as I just noted, crystal clear to every person at this university, but particularly leadership, that they are accountable for performing their responsibilities in this important area.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about individuals who chose to retire or resign, did the Dean of Students choose to retire as a result of this Title IX stuff, or is that related?
I don't know, Tegan.
Okay.
I wasn't here then, so sorry.
Okay.
Ashley or Courtney, do you have any questions for President Johnson or Chancellor Powers?
I think all of my questions have been asked already.
Okay, very well. Anyone else in the room?
I have one additional question on the line, if there's time.
Of course, Tegan, go ahead.
Thanks. I had a question. So we've heard before that there was the 5 sexual assault cases between July 2011 and July 2014 that weren't handled correctly. As a result of this review, have there been additional cases that have popped up? I mean, is 5 still the number, or how many cases weren't handled properly?
Those 5 were not handled correctly between the years that we analyzed this, 2011 and 2014. Each case has been since opened. Both the accused and the accusers have been contacted, and we've proceeded according to policy.
Okay, so it's still just those 5 cases. Additional ones have not arisen as a result of the review.
That's correct.
What are the other 11 that are reports that are offhand? But
my understanding is that it goes way, way back. It's a statute of limitations issue.
So the 5 cases mentioned in the report have been reopened then?
Yes, correct. And either in progress or concluded, according to policy.
I'm sorry, I haven't heard the 11 number before. Where is that coming from?
My understanding is that is age old, looking at the entire universe of these. It goes back beyond that.
So prior to 2011, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And we can track that down and shoot it out to you.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else in the room? Okay, well, thank you very much, everyone, for your time today. Obviously, this is an important issue and one that the university continues to address directly. So if you have any follow-up questions, you can either direct them to myself or to Marmion Grimes, and we'll be happy to help you out. So thank you. Thank you, President Johnson. Thank you, Chancellor Powers.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
Jim. Yep. Thank you.
I sound like some sort of leaning forward and they ain't getting your job
tonight. Do you need anything else or are you good to go?
I think we're good. I think we're good.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.